Book of Romans, and we're in chapter 4. Romans chapter 4. What then shall we say that Abraham our father was found according to the flesh? For if Abraham was justified by works, he has something to boast about, but not before God. For what does the scripture say? Abraham believed God, and it was accounted to him for righteousness. Now to him who works, the wages are not counted as grace, but as debt. But to him who does not work, but believes on him who justifies the ungodly, his faith is accounted for righteousness. Just as David also described the blessedness of the man to whom God imputes righteousness apart from works. Blessed are those whose lawless deeds are forgiven and whose sins are covered. Blessed is the man to whom the Lord shall not impute sin. Does this blessedness then come upon the circumcised only, or upon the uncircumcised also? For we say that faith was accounted to Abraham for righteousness. How then was it accounted? While he was circumcised or uncircumcised? Not while circumcised, but while uncircumcised. And he received the sign of circumcision, a seal of the righteousness of the faith, which he had while still uncircumcised, that he might be the father of all those who believe, though they are uncircumcised, that righteousness might be imputed to them also. And the father of circumcision to those who not only are of the circumcision, but who also walk in the steps of the faith which our father Abraham had while still uncircumcised. Now, the argument, of course, is still the same issue. The issue is, how are the Gentiles justified before God, and how are the Jews justified before God? And he gave us the mechanics of that process in chapter 3, from verse 21 onwards. And he is now seeking to prove his case. And in proving his case, he is using Abraham as his example. Because remember, to the Jews, he has this special place. He is the father of the faith. He is the father of the nation. He is this man who stands above every man in the Old Testament as a man who was holy and who was righteous and who was before God a man who deserved. Sorry, Leo, can we have a little bit more volume, please? A man who felt that, or that one could look at and say, surely this man should be able to become righteous on his own merits. I don't think that there's anyone else that one could look at. Maybe Moses. But even David, David is quoted as another example in this argument. You'll see in verse 6, he is quoting David also. But David, one could look at and say, well, David was a man who had mistakes. David had made many mistakes. He had committed murder. He had committed adultery. He had a number of wives. And so we can say, well, maybe David couldn't be made righteous based on his works. But Abraham surely must have been able to be justified by his works. And so he's using the example of the one man who should be the prime example of a righteous and just and holy man. And he's proving that even this man was not justified by his works. And so the argument is obviously that if Abraham didn't make it, if Abraham could not be justified by his works, then how will we be justified by our works? And so, but he's also pointing out, and you'll see, and we're going to go through this, but I want to give you the overview. He is also saying that he was uncircumcised when he believed. So his salvation was not because of his circumcision. Remember, many of the Jews thought that they were saved just because they were circumcised, just because they were in a covenant relationship with God. The same way as many Christians today, so-called Christians today, believe they are saved because they were baptized as babies, which in the Reformed teaching is a sign of the covenant. And so I was baptized. I'm saved because of that. Or in the Roman church, I was baptized as a baby. I was, and so I have to be saved because of that. But in fact, he's showing that the circumcision did not save Abraham, that Abraham was justified before he became circumcised, and that circumcision was simply an expression, a sign of that which God had done for Abraham. And so he's proving to the Jews that circumcision cannot save them. Circumcision did not save Abraham, circumcision does not save them. But he's also assuring us as Gentiles that we can be saved without circumcision. Now, this is an important point because there are many, not many, but there are Christians today in the Jewish tradition, in the Messianic tradition, who believe that we as Christians have to adopt Jewish traditions in order to be full Christians. But he is showing that Abraham was justified when he was uncircumcised, and so we can relate to Abraham. We can say, well, Abraham, he was just like us. He was not circumcised. He was not a Jew. He did not have the covenant when God justified him. And so in every respect, Abraham conforms to us. And so you can see that as much as he showed that the Jews and the Gentiles both sin, that both are justified on the same basis, he is now showing that we can both relate to Abraham because Abraham's example is given to us before his circumcision. In other words, technically, Abraham was a Gentile when God called him. We're just saying that technically. Now let's look at this passage in verse 1 then of chapter 4. What then shall we say that Abraham, our father, has found according to the flesh? According to the flesh. In other words, as far as the body is concerned. For if Abraham was justified by works, he has something to boast about, but not before God. So if Abraham had something to boast about, and certainly as far as man is concerned, Abraham has something to boast about. He was a man of tremendous faith. He was a man of tremendous loyalty to God. He was willing to sacrifice his own son. And as far as the flesh is concerned, we can say here is a man who is a wonderful example. But as far as God is concerned, does he have anything to boast about? No. And that's the problem, is that we often look at ourselves in human terms, in the flesh. And we say, well, I'm quite a good guy. I even go to church on Sunday nights. But when God looks at me, I have nothing to boast about. And so we may look pretty good as far as the flesh is concerned. But as far as God is concerned, when God looks, we don't look very good at all. And so Abraham may have had some reason for boasting on the human level, but not before God. And so verse 3 then. For what does the scripture say? Abraham believed God and was accounted to him for righteousness. And here we have another one of these words. It was accounted to him. It was reckoned to him. And you'll see that he's now going to be using accounting terms. In the previous section, in verses 21 through 26, he was using legal terms. But now he's coming from another angle, and he's going to explain the same issue, but he's going to explain it in bookkeeping or accounting terms. And so he is saying then that Abraham believed God, and that was accounted to him for righteousness. So Abraham in his accounts, and for those who did bookkeeping, I don't know here in America, but when we learned bookkeeping or accounting, you learned to do these little T accounts, and you had debit and credit. Now, it doesn't matter which is which side, but let's say that this is the negative side and this is the positive side. And what did Abraham have on the negative side? Well, he had many things. What did he have on the positive side? He only had one thing. He had faith. He had faith. Now, this is a very, very important point that you need to understand if you understand nothing else that I say tonight. Because many people misunderstand this point. And they say Abraham's faith saved him. Abraham's faith saved him. In other words, his faith, when you added it up, his faith was big enough to cancel out his sins, his negatives. Abraham's faith did not save him. Abraham's faith did not save him. And this is a teaching which I hear many, many times, and I think it's mainly because people just don't understand and just not bother to read the scripture. What does that verse say? His faith was accounted to him for righteousness. So God says, you've got faith. But in fact, what I will do is I will account, I will reckon that faith, not as faith. Well, he's not discounting the faith, but I'm going to reckon it as righteousness. So because you have faith, I will give you righteousness. And of course, the righteousness cancels out the sin. It's not the faith that cancels out the sin. It's not the faith that made him righteous. It's not the faith that made him just. It is the fact that God gave him righteousness. And so if you then have another set of accounts and you say, Abraham has faith, how much is that worth in comparison to righteousness? Is it an equal exchange? No, not remotely. Abraham's faith was worth very, very little in comparison to the righteousness that God was going to give him. And so this was not that Abraham, and again, this is the teaching that is very popular today and mistaken, is that Abraham's faith was as good as the righteousness, that Abraham's faith deserved the righteousness. No, Abraham's faith, and obviously not Abraham only, but us also, our faith does not earn righteousness. Our faith does not deserve righteousness. Our faith is not comparable in value to righteousness. But God in His grace says, if you have faith, I will give you righteousness. There is no accounting for that. There is no way you can compare it and say that faith is equal to righteousness, that faith deserves righteousness. No. God, just in His sovereign mercy, says, if you have faith, then I will give you righteousness. And so God accounts to him righteousness. Now, this sounds very simple, but you need to remember this when you read on the subject. Because most people will say, no, we are saved by our faith. My faith does not save me. It is the righteousness that God accounts to me that saves me. Yes, the faith is necessary. Because without faith, it is impossible to please God. So if I do not have faith, I cannot put the process into motion. And of course, I don't initiate the process. God initiates the process. But God says, I will give you righteousness. All you have to do is believe. And I suppose it would be the same if someone came and said, you know, I will give you, there's this $2 million house. I will give it to you if you give me your old motor car. Now, there is no comparison between a $2 million house and a $5,000 motor car. You can't say, I earned that, I bought it with a motor car. But there is a condition. The guy doesn't say, I'll give you the house or the $2 million house. No, he says, if you give me your old car, I will give you the $2 million house. Now, of course, the difference between the righteousness and the faith that we have is even bigger than $5,000 and $2 million. But there is a condition to that righteousness. God could account righteousness to everybody. But then what would happen? He would become unjust. He would become unjust. And so he says, no, I will give you righteousness. But there is only one condition. And that is that you believe. That's the only condition. And so my faith and Abraham's faith did not bring about, it did not earn the righteousness. It was accounted to him. And this word is very, very important. And so we have righteousness. not because we have earned it or because we are righteous, but because God has accounted it to us. If we're honest with ourselves, we know that we are not righteous. We do unrighteous things 1,000 times a day. We're unrighteous in every aspect of who we are. And yet God accounts righteousness to us. God says, in my eyes, you're righteous. I'm prepared to put to your account righteousness if you believe. And so, verse 3 then. For what does the scripture say? Abraham believed God and it was accounted to him for righteousness. Now to him who works, the wages are not counted as grace, but as debt. So he's coming back to this to this accounting system. And he's saying, if we're going to be based on works, if the account is based on works, and I put down all of my works, and I say, I want to be paid based on my works, what am I going to be paid? Death. The wages. Because he says, if I'm going to be based on works, works are connected to wages. And the wages of sin is death. The wages of sin is death. And so he says, it is not of works. To him who works, the wages are not counted as grace, but as debt. And that's the problem. Many people are saying, I can stand before God on my works. Yeah, sure, you can stand before God on your works. But the problem is that you can put your works together and you have another sub-account here. You have all your good works and you have your bad works. And the bottom line is that you're going to come short, and the shortfall has to be paid by death. That's the bottom line. And so we can't base this thing on works. And of course, this is the argument. And so he's saying, what do we base the accounting process on? Grace. It's not on works, but it is based on grace. It's not based on debt, but on grace. Verse 4. Now to him who works, the wages are not counted as grace, but as debt. And so if I'm going to be works-based, then it's a basis of debt. But if I say, no, I'm not going to base it on works, I'm going to base it on faith, then it is on the basis of grace, which gives me what I don't deserve, which gives me, because what I deserve is death. All right, now he's introduced that, and he's going to come back to that in a later chapter. Verse 5. Of whom are the fathers, and from whom, according to the flesh, Christ came? He's meaning Abraham. The fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. All the fathers came out of Abraham, and from whom, according to the flesh, Christ came. So Jesus came out of Abraham. Where am I? No. Sorry. Verse 5. Sorry, I jumped ahead a few chapters. But to him who does not work, but believes on him who justifies the ungodly, his faith is accounted for righteousness. So it's exactly what we've been saying. He who does not work. Now, it doesn't mean that we mustn't work. You can easily misread that and say, well, that means that I must do nothing. No, he is saying those who do not base their accounting system on works, whose basis of their relationship with God is not based on works. To him who does not work but believes, who bases their relationship on God on faith, and believes on him who justifies, notice, the ungodly. This is the wonderful thing about grace. If God was justifying the godly, well, that's no big deal. Because they didn't need justification. Not that there is such a thing as somebody who is godly or who doesn't need. But he justifies the ungodly. And so we can say, well, you know, Abraham deserved to be justified. Because he was such a good man. Now, he's just pointed out, Abraham didn't deserve to be justified either. But maybe relative to a very bad man, we can say, Abraham is a better case to be justified. But now he's going to the other extreme and he's saying, in your minds, Abraham is up there. But he says, on the other extreme is the ungodly. And God even justifies the ungodly. And so if God could justify Abraham at that extreme and the ungodly at that extreme, God can justify everybody else in between. He justifies the ungodly. His faith is accounted for righteousness. Same point that we've looked at. Just as David also described the blessedness of the man to whom God imputes righteousness apart from works. And now he's quoting David. Blessed are those whose lawless deeds are forgiven and whose sins are covered. Blessed is the man to whom the Lord shall not impute sin. And here's a new word. Impute. It's quite a simple word. It simply means reckon. A credit. What's the Spanish word? No? The Spanish word? Don't have a Spanish Bible? No, impute. No, it's another word. I forgot what it is. No, it's another Greek, another Spanish word. Verse 6. Attribute. Attribute. We speak about the writing of this book is attributed to such a man. We credit that person with it. We reckon it to that person's account. But we, the word impute and attribute in this way or reckon is not connected necessarily with reality. It's not necessarily connected with what that person did or deserves. And so when God imputes to us righteousness, He is attributing to us righteousness. He is giving to us. He is reckoning us as righteous. He is saying He qualifies as righteous, even if He is not. And this is the wonderful thing. And so God imputes to us. Now He says also, blessed is the man to whom God does not impute sin. In verse 8, blessed is the man to whom the Lord shall not impute sin. So, he can impute righteousness, or he can impute sin. Now, when he imputes sin, that is reality. That is what is on our account. Because it's still this accounting thing, reckoning. And so on the account is sin. And so he says, well, God can look at your account and he can say, I see sin on your account. And I reckon that as valid. I reckon that as what you owe me. Or he can reckon to my account righteousness, which has nothing to do with what I earned or with what I deserved, but simply how that God reckons the account. And so God chooses to reckon to my account righteousness. He attributes or he imputes to my account righteousness. And so it has nothing to do with the reality. The reality is sin. When I look at my account, I say, but you know, there are all these things I did. But God says, I have imputed to you righteousness. I've written to your account righteousness, which cancels out the sin. And that's the only thing that matters. It's the same as if you go to, and of course, I'm taking a shortcut here, and I'll explain that in a minute. But in the old days, in South Africa, the shopkeepers had very simple bookkeeping systems. They had a big book on the counter. And it was called the book. And when you bought something on account, you bought it on the book. And he would write it down in the book, one loaf of bread, 11 pennies. And when you came at the end of the month to pay the account, he would simply scratch over the amount you owed him and write paid. There was no computer, there was no invoices and statements and all these fancy things. It all just happened on that book. Now, if you came there and you said, you know, I bought milk and bread and this and this and this and this, and I owe you that much. And he says, no, but I wrote here paid. What is the issue? What is the account going to be at the end of the day? What I thought I owed him? Or what his book says I owe him? It's what his book says. And if he made a mistake in writing paid, or somebody else paid my account, or whatever happened, or whether I paid and I forgot I paid it, it doesn't matter. If it says it's paid, it's paid. That's all there is to it. And that's exactly the same thing that God is saying. He's saying, I don't care what you think is on the account. I have written paid. Remember, it is finished. I have reckoned to you righteousness. And so it has nothing to do with the reality. I know the reality that I owe God an enormous amount. But his book says it's paid. His book says it is righteous. Now, the shortcut I've taken is that I have not explained the fact that, in fact, that debt had to be paid. Jesus paid the debt. God could not, remember we established this last week, a couple of weeks ago. God could not just unilaterally say, forget about it, let's just wipe it all off, let's just write paid. No, he couldn't do that. Somebody had to pay the debt, and Jesus paid that debt. But as far as I am concerned, I have righteousness. He has reckoned to me, he has imputed to me, he's accounted to me righteousness. And that is the same thing that he did with Abraham. And so the blessed is the man to whom God imputes righteousness and does not impute sin. Verse 9. Does this blessedness then come upon the circumcised only, or upon the uncircumcised also? For we say that faith was accounted to Abraham for righteousness. How then was it accounted? So here's the question. Is this only for the Jews, this process where God, because God can reckon the sin, or God can reckon the righteousness. Is it only available to the Jews or to the circumcised that he does this process, that he says, no, I'll reckon righteousness to your account and not sin? And of course, the answer is, it's not just for the Jews. Verse 10. How then was it accounted? While he was circumcised or uncircumcised? Not while circumcised, but while uncircumcised. So just exactly what I said in the beginning in the introduction, that this whole process happened for Abraham when he was uncircumcised. So circumcision had nothing to do with it. Circumcision had nothing to do with making him righteous or accounting for righteousness. The circumcision had nothing to do in the whole process. It was simply something that came afterward. And so, how was it accounted, verse 10? While he was circumcised, nor or uncircumcised? Not while circumcised, but while uncircumcised. Verse 11, and he received the sign of circumcision, a seal of the righteousness of the faith, which he had while still uncircumcised, that he might be the father of all those who believe, though they are uncircumcised, that righteousness might be imputed to them also. All right. So, let me see if I can illustrate this. So, God imputes to Abraham and he is uncircumcised, so he is technically a Gentile. And God imputes to him righteousness. And what does circumcision have to do with this process? Well, it flows out of the process. It does not bring the process about. The circumcision did not make him righteous. The circumcision had nothing to do with him becoming righteous. But it was simply a sign. He received the sign, verse 11, of circumcision, a seal of the righteousness of the faith which he had while still uncircumcised. So if Abraham remained uncircumcised, let's just ask this hypothetical question, would he still be righteous? Yes, he would. He would be disobedient because God had told him to be circumcised. But it had nothing to do with his righteousness. God imputed that righteousness to him on the basis of faith. That was all. It was not on the basis of his circumcision, or on the basis that he would sacrifice his son, or on the basis that he would do anything. It was simply because Abraham believed God. God says, "There it is. Righteousness is yours." So circumcision did not make him righteous, and the absence of circumcision would not make him unrighteous. And we're not, as I said, there is the issue of obedience. That's another matter. And so out of that, God gives him a sign. And the scripture is just so plain. That's what it is. He gives him a sign. What was the purpose of the sign? Or let me put it this way. Who was the sign for? No. Who would see that mark? Only himself. I mean, this is a very private thing. Only he would see the sign. I mean, he's not going to go down the street flashing to everybody. And I'm, you know, just making a point. The sign was for him. The sign was for him. God didn't need the sign because God knew what he was doing. God knew. God doesn't need these things. So the sign was really only for him. And every time he was able to look at the sign, it was a reminder that God had made him righteous. And of course, the sign is then carried forward from generation to generation. And that is very, very important because, of course, in this whole thing, because the Jews are saying, and this is very important because there's a very big and very a massive debate amongst theologians right now about Paul's theology and that these people didn't believe that they were saved through works and so on, and I'm not going to get into that. But the circumcision was simply a sign of what God had already done. And if you're going to look at baptism then, baptism is the same thing. Now, hear me carefully. Baptism does not replace circumcision. But in the same way as circumcision is a sign of this process between God and Abraham, baptism is a sign of the process between God and us. And it is a sign of the fact that we were Gentiles, and God accounted to us righteousness. He washed us. He cleansed us. All of the pictures you want to use. And so we have another sign. It is a sign of baptism. Now, you can see that the sign of circumcision had nothing to do with that process. It did not save him. And in the same way, baptism cannot save us. It's simply an expression of what God had done for us. Now, of course, to the Jews, this became a problem because they misread the sign. And they said, the sign means what? That we have a covenant with God and God's going to save us. Doesn't matter who or what we are, whether we believe or don't believe we're God's people. They misread the sign. And unfortunately today, people misread the sign of baptism. And they say, well, I'm in a relationship with God because my parents had me baptized. Or even if you were baptized as an adult, there are many adults who no longer serve God, but they feel that they're saved because they were baptized. No, the sign is really only, and I'm digressing from the text now, but the sign is really only relevant If it is reflecting the spiritual truth. If Abraham stopped believing, would his circumcision help him anything? No. So the circumcision and the baptism is only valid when it is backed up with a spiritual reality. Okay. And so he, verse 11, he received the sign of circumcision, a seal of the righteousness. That's just a stamp of the righteousness of faith which he had while still uncircumcised, that he might be the father of all those who believe, though they are uncircumcised, that righteousness might be imputed to them also. So Abraham now becomes the father of, and this is a very important point, all who believe. Abraham is not the father of three faiths. Time magazine some years ago had a cover saying, Abraham, father of three faiths, just straight after 9/11. And obviously what they were saying is that Islam traces back to Abraham, Judaism and Christianity all trace back to Abraham. Abraham is the father of these faiths. No. Abraham is not even the faith, the father of the Jews. He may be the father of the Jews in the flesh. But as far as God is concerned, he is the father of all who believe. And so, whether I am, and remember, he's speaking to people who are looking at one another and saying, well, you know, God is finished with the Jews. He's now dealing with the Gentiles, with the church. We are now God's chosen people. And the Jews are saying, no, but we were God's chosen people to begin with, and God's covenants are irrevocable. God will always, and so we're God's special people. And he's saying, no, everybody who believes has Abraham as their father. And that's a very, very important thing. So, what is the importance in the scripture of being part of a, or the descendant of a father in the Old Testament? What was the benefit? The inheritance. And remember that Abraham had a covenant with God, and under that covenant were certain blessings, land, and children, and a blessing upon all nations. And so we become inheritors of the covenant, and we become inheritors of the blessings that God gives to Abraham. And so he becomes the father, where are we, verse 11, that he received the sign that he might be the father, in the middle of the verse, that he might be the father of all those who believe, though they are uncircumcised, that righteousness might be imputed to them also. And so one of the blessings that comes to those who believe, all who believe, is the blessing of righteousness. Now verse 12, and the father of circumcision to those who not only are the circumcision, but who also walk in the steps of the father, which our father, in the steps of the faith, which our father Abraham had while still uncircumcised. Now notice the emphasis there. He is the father of circumcision, so he is the father of the uncircumcised who believe, but he is also the father of the circumcised, but who do what? Who follow in his steps. Not just because, and remember this was the argument Jesus had with the Pharisees all the time. They said, we have Abraham as our father. And he says, no, your father is the devil. And so he's saying that Abraham is not the father. He may be in the flesh, but he's just established the flesh is worthless. Because if we're going to reckon according to the flesh, then we are doomed, we're condemned. So we can't reckon according to the flesh. We have to reckon according to God's reckoning. And God's saying, I'm not interested whether you're Jewish or Gentile. I'm not interested whether you're circumcised or uncircumcised. I'm interested in one thing only. Do you follow in the footsteps of Abraham? And if you follow in his footsteps, You are reckoned as a son of Abraham, and you are reckoned as righteousness. And so what's the point? The point is, it doesn't matter who we are. There is no privilege for the Jew or for the Gentile. There is no advantage in circumcision or disadvantage in non-circumcision. There's only one issue that matters. There is no advantage in baptism. There is no advantage in whatever tradition I have. There's only one thing that God is looking for, and that is faith on my part. And in exchange for faith, he gives me what? Righteousness. And that's the bottom line. Simple.
Thanks, Leo. Questions?